Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of July 2nd, 2019. This week, we take our first look at the 2020 battle for the 1st Congressional District, now that four Republican candidates have announced their candidacy, a sign of just how focused Republicans are on flipping back that low country seat they held for more than three decades. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections instead of laughing at the Knicks for absolutely face-planting in free agency. AT told me to say this, that's why I'm saying this. Or reading about the Rays and Mafia. You gotta check this story out on the New York Times. It's a couple months old, but it's still completely fascinating. Raisin Mafia. It's a thing. Shout out to CJ for that. And now for some real news in our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news, so here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that it would be inappropriate for federal courts to weigh in on the issue of partisan gerrymandering. The Charleston Post and Courier reports that the decision angered many South Carolina Democrats and voting rights activist groups like the League of Women Voters of South Carolina. The ruling means that the Republican-controlled state legislature will be in charge of drawing new districts after next year's census. So far, efforts to create an independent commission for drawing district maps have gone nowhere. Number two, the Greenwood Index Journal reports Shaw Industries is closing a second South Carolina production plant, laying off another 120 people. The company said it is moving some of the work to two South Carolina prisons, including Perry Correctional Institution. The plant in Clinton is expected to shut down by mid-August. Shaw Industries had previously announced in May a plant in central South Carolina would be closing, laying off 249 people. Number three, the Post and Courier reports that federal regulators fined a company operating the Port of Charleston for major safety violations last week. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration issued Coastal Great Southern $26,520 in fines after a van exploded, shaking nearby homes and sending one employee to the hospital. Coastal Great Southern is a subsidiary of a transportation and logistics company based out of Illinois. And number four, the Greenville News reports that nearly 25% of child fatality cases reviewed by state authorities from 2010 to 2017 involved unsecured guns. The State Child Fatality Advisory Committee's analysis found 66 of the 238 sudden or unexplained child deaths involved unsecured guns, which led to accidental discharge, homicide, or suicide. According to the South Carolina Victim Assistance Network, in homes where guns and children are both present, half of those homes have guns that are kept unlocked and loaded. And now for our Florida Man News segment, where every week we give you just a headline, a little taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. Headline: Florida Man breaks into Wendy's, grills burger, and steals cash. And just like the Raisin Mafia burying their competition, oh, that's right, we're still talking about the Raisin Mafia. We buried the lead. We're a little less than a year until the primary. No, not the 2020 Democrats. The 1st Congressional District Republican primary. Yeah, remember how I said we're always on the campaign trail? Well, here we are. And it's not just us focusing on this primary. The entire Republican Party is. So far, four Republicans, and more are expected, are vying to become the nominee to challenge Joe Cunningham in November 2020. That's because the party wants to flip the district red after Democrat Joe Cunningham delivered a major upset last fall. For the latest on all this, we got the Post and Courier's Caitlin Bird on the horn this week from Charleston to give us our first curtain raiser on this race. Caitlin, welcome back. Twice in 3 weeks. This is exciting.
This is very exciting. You better be putting stars on the board for me, Gavin.
I am. I'm glad you're keeping track with that.
I have to. I mean, I haven't physically gone to Columbia, so I need someone to look out for my stars.
There you go. So the big news is that several people have announced in this race the candidacy, including most recently State Representative Nancy Mace. She was the most recent person to jump in the Republican fray here, Caitlin. What's the latest on this, and kind of give us a little lay of the land about what we're looking at right now?
Absolutely. So just a short primer for folks who didn't know, when now Congressman Joe Cunningham won the first congressional district, it was the first time in almost 40 years that a Democrat has actually held this seat. So it was a historic win for Democrats. And then as soon as he won it, Republicans already were salivating over the opportunity to get it back, because historically it is really a Republican-leaning district. It's really drawn to favor Republicans. And so now Joe Cunningham is about 7 months into the job. He was sworn in January. So the basic math that I can do, that means he's, what, about 25% of the way through his first two-year term. And there are four Republican challengers who have lined up to basically say, I could do a better job than he could. And it's really interesting already to see who's kind of out of the gates already. We have two individuals who are both from Bluffton, so not from Charleston, which is where Joe Cunningham is from, and also Mark Sanford, who used to hold this seat. He was from the Mount Pleasant and Beaufort area. He could claim both thanks to his farm in Coosaw. But we have two men from Bluffton who are challenging Joe Cunningham for this seat, and then we have two women who are challenging Joe Cunningham for this seat. And I only bring that up because when we saw the November general last year, we saw Katie Arrington, the Republican candidate who tried to beat Joe Cunningham, I should say. She was very successful in her GOP primary against Mark Sanford, who had never, ever lost an electoral race until that very moment. So she did do something historic as well. But this year, we're already seeing two Republican women who are very different from Katie Arrington, who are saying that they could be the right fit for this district. So it's interesting to see just how things are already starting to shape up in terms of experience. We've got two council members who are running for this, Mike Covert from Beaufort County, then Kathy Landing from Mount Pleasant. You mentioned Nancy Mace, a state representative, and then Luke Cunningham, a 26-year-old teacher who is not related to Joe Cunningham. But it is kind of an interesting idea to think about, could we see a Cunningham v. Cunningham race? It's just kind of entertaining for the ballot perspective alone. I'm not saying that anything is funny about any campaign right now, because all of these Republicans take this very seriously. State Republican Party Chair Drew McKissick has called this the party's top priority. Winning the seat back is a top priority. Nationally, Republicans also see this seat as a top priority, which if you think about even 4 or 5 years ago, this seat would never have been a priority. It would have been a given.
And is that's because, obviously, looking at it, it's a Republican-held seat. It's past history. But it did obviously get shaken up with Katie Arrington really kind of, again, like you said, beating Sanford by about like 3,000 votes, close plus or minus, in that primary last year. It really just kind of threw things, into a different perspective. She was really doubling down on Trump and really putting it out there and really hammering home with that. Obviously, she had some issues with back and forth over offshore drilling, which I'm guessing it sounds like, just based on your reporting, people are really focused on in terms of making sure that they are staunch opponents, and they make it very clear that they're staunch opponents to any kind of offshore drilling or seismic testing.
Yes, all of the four Republicans who are currently running against Joe Cunningham, or trying to run against each other, I should say, for the chance to run against Joe Cunningham, all have said that they're opposed to offshore drilling. All have mentioned that either in their own announcements, whether they've had events, whether they've had videos, whether they've had Facebook posts. All of them have made it very much an early talking point to the media and to constituents to say, I am unequivocally opposed to offshore drilling and seismic testing. They basically want to neutralize Cunningham on his signature issue from 2018 early on. And if you think about it from a campaign strategy perspective, it's really smart because Joe Cunningham, what he was able to do with the offshore drilling issue was really use it as a wedge issue. And that's something that you and I have talked about before, that it wasn't just the issue itself, but what the issue represented, which was, did Joe Cunningham have a grasp of what the district needed and wanted? And he was able to successfully campaign and say, yes, I am, and yes, I hear you. You're not in favor of offshore drilling, and you're not in favor of seismic testing, and neither am I. And that was something where Katie Arrington really struggled with a shifting stance on that issue, and just really struggled to come out on top of that narrative. So the fact that all of these Republicans are trying to just go ahead and make that issue a non-issue this time is really fascinating. It forces Joe Cunningham to have to talk about other issues on the campaign trail, and not just talking about his love of low country beer and his love of whales, but really they're trying to get him talking about other issues that they say the district cares about, things like immigration and healthcare, for example.
And I have seen some of them kind of talking about we need someone that's going to be a little bit more mature, someone that's not going to be doing attention-seeking stunts. I'm guessing they're referring to him using that air horn during that congressional hearing on seismic testing to kind of, you know, replicate a little bit about what that seismic testing, those blast guns sound like. It seems like everyone's kind of jumping on that point to really kind of say, hey, we need someone that's not doing anything attention-seeking. But, I mean, I can't think of many other instances where he was doing anything that drastic that would make it seem like he's a attention seeker. Are they referencing something else, maybe?
Well, Kathy Landing definitely did bring up the maturity issue when she launched. Nancy Mace talked about in her campaign video that she wants to do something instead of be someone. They're both trying to draw a contrast in terms of what their intentions are in Washington. Joe Cunningham's other big kind of claim to fame media moment so far was bringing a six-pack of beer onto the House floor, which was not allowed. But that wasn't really something that, at least from our understanding and talking with his campaign and his congressional staff, that wasn't really something that he did to seek attention. It's really just shows that he's a freshman lawmaker. He's a freshman learning what you can and can't do. And just the fact that he was able to then use that and kind of spin it for his favor, because he did campaign in breweries. He actually was the politician you could have a beer with. That was kind of a really clever shtick that they did throughout his 2018 midterm campaign. So in terms of publicity seeking, we haven't seen that as much. He's honestly, because he's so new, it's kind of hard to say that he's grandstanding when he's really still feeling around as to what he needs to do. And it seems like some of the Republicans who are jumping into this race, the bigger point that they're trying to make isn't so much about whether Joe Cunningham is seeking attention in this seat, but just the fact that he may not be the right fit, or he may not be the best representative of the Lowcountry, which all of these Republicans would argue first and foremost is that he's a Democrat and the district is Republican.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, what politician isn't an attention seeker? That's kind of goes hand in hand, some would say.
Yeah, it takes some courage to put yourself out there like that. So it's always interesting when you start to see kind of the early characterizations that happen, especially when the campaign really is just starting for everybody. And it's still mind-boggling to me to think that we are, what is it, about a year out from the primary, and then we'll have the general. So in terms of that tale of how long campaigns are, I just think it's important to contrast the fact that we're about a year out from a GOP primary, and Joe Cunningham's only 25% done with his job.
Yeah, it just goes to show just really how much they're salivating to get going with this race. But, you know, we did see that McMaster has already retained his campaign manager from the last time around. He's not up again for several more years. So everyone's really kind of keeping an eye on things in the political world of South Carolina, that's for sure. And kind of talking about that, I did see a tweet from Tim Pearson, who is the governor's campaign manager. And he said that, you know, just because Mace has the seat in the House doesn't mean that she has the high name recognition. But, you know, it's kind of worth noting that we did see a poll out in January from Trafalgar that was kind of looking at the race. It was like a really early poll done just to look at name recognition, who could be a potential candidate again in this race. And again, Katie Arrington got 25.5%, Sanford 23.2%. 22% were undecided. But at the bottom of that was Nancy Mace at 4.7%. So while people, you know, obviously that's a lot lower than all the other ones, it still shows that she does have some of this name ID. You know, are we going to see other people jump in this race that do have that greater name ID?
I think that right now it's very early to see what other names will join this group of people, but all of them in their own ways have to struggle with name ID. Kathy Landing is a Mount Pleasant Town Councilwoman. I mean, do people in Beaufort know her? Same for Luke Cunningham. He's a 26-year-old teacher. Mike Cover is a Beaufort County Councilman. He's been in the area a little bit longer, but at the same time, do people from Charleston know Mike? Do people in Mount Pleasant know Luke? Who knows? Nancy has a little bit of a name advantage, even though that early poll shows that she would be struggling, because we have to remember that each of these candidates are kind of come into this race with a core group of backers, even if they end up moving to other candidates as time goes on. But Nancy Mace, for example, you know, even outside of the state legislature, people know her as the first woman to graduate from the Citadel Corps of Cadets. The New York Times wrote about her when she went through the Citadel Corps of Cadets. She's not a nobody. None of these people really are nobodies. It's just more the battle of the unknowns versus the slightly maybe better knowns. Mm-hmm. But
she did challenge Lindsey Graham in 2014. Remember that huge field of Republican primary challengers? That that kind of gives you a little bit of an idea about how to run a congressional campaign, too. So I'm guessing that's going to help her when we kind of get out there more.
And I think it'll be interesting to just even see what she does differently this go round. When I covered her State House 99 race, her special election when she first got to the legislature, she told me in an interview that she didn't want to run it like she ran her Senate race because she lost, first of all. And then second of all, she didn't want to be the mold of Republican woman candidate that people wanted her to be. And so she seems to have at least said that she's settled into her way of running a race her way. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that translates now that she's, you know, going for another federal seat. You know, how is Nancy going to be? She didn't have a traditional big kickoff party. She rolled out a campaign video. It's going to be really cool, I think, so far to see these people come out. Since we don't know too much about them, it's kind of nice when you don't have a big, big name come to the table and people automatically can assume certain things about the candidate. In this case, it will really force voters to pay attention, especially on the Republican side, as to what kind of Republican challenger they want to see going up against Joe Cunningham and who they think could be most successful.
And just kind of sticking with Mace for a minute, we do know that she'd be pretty close with Donald Trump because she did help out with his campaign in 2016. I'm guessing that's probably going to also maybe boost her network and boost her credibility when it comes to, you know, fundraising, getting her name out there more, and just kind of getting more legitimacy behind her campaign.
Yeah, unlike other candidates who can say that they support Trump, Nancy Mace can actually point to a line item on her resume, and she won't have to spend as much time defending her Trumpiness or her Trump favorability, if you will, because she can already just claim, look, I helped get the man elected. And that's something that she can use to her advantage since Trump is a huge part of the Republican Party. As, you know, the president, you're kind of the default head of the party. And she's not going to have to make that case as to whether or not she's Trump enough. Kathy Landing might have to do that, even though she's trying to find her own ways of supporting Trump. She has said that she does back the president and his reelection efforts. But Kathy is focused more on faith issues. She's talking about other issues as well. But in contrast with just Nancy, Kathy is focused more on really introducing herself, her history, her ties to the Lowcountry, the fact that she is technically a genius and is a member of Mensa. So everybody's really introducing themselves. But in terms of the Trump piece, that seems to come secondary to making sure that everyone says that they're opposed to offshore drilling. So how much Trump is or isn't going to be a factor in this race will be interesting. Will Nancy Mace, if she continues, get endorsed by Donald Trump? We saw that was a huge boost for Katie Arrington in her GOP primary. So it's going to be fun. I'm already tired.
I was going to say, plenty to look forward to. Glad to know that you'll be keeping a very close eye on this race for us, Caitlin, because we know this will be a huge race next year, especially after we get done with the Democratic presidential primary in February. We'll be keeping all eyes on the upcoming statehouse races. And then, of course, this will be, I think this will be the biggest congressional race, at least for the House of Representatives in the state. We'll also be watching the Senate race with Lindsey Graham and Jamie Harrison. But again, like we said, all eyes are on this this congressional seat, especially from the Republican Party. So thank you again, Caitlin, and we'll be keeping up with you.
Thanks so much, Gavin.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020-related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. First up, Senator Lindsey Graham said on Face the Nation this week that former Vice President Joe Biden needs to, quote, up his game after underperforming at the Democratic presidential debate, but said candidates should not underestimate him. Graham praised California Senator Kamala Harris's chops and said, quote, she's got game, she's very talented, she's very smart, and she'll be a force to be reckoned with. And doubling up on some Lindsey Graham news, the Post and Courier Change research poll from early June looked at next year's U.S. Senate race and found that 51% of voters said they'd back Lindsey Graham, and 36% said they'd vote for the Democratic candidate. 12% said they were unsure. And this was a survey of 2,312 registered South Carolina voters. And former Congressman Trey Gowdy said on Twitter last week that he has a new book coming out called How to Win an Argument, Mastering the Art of Persuasion by Asking the Right Questions. Gowdy, who represented the state's 4th congressional district, said the book will draw on his 8 years on Capitol Hill and 16 years as a state and federal prosecutor. It will be published by Crown Publishing. And also be sure to check out Trail Bites this week. We continue our slog through all the Democratic candidates who were in town for the convention the other week. as we keep dropping these trail bites of several candidates who spoke before the thousands that gathered at the state Democratic Party convention. It's our little 4th of July treat. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here with some more trivia? Russ, you are here.
Glad to be back.
You have a guest with you. Bradley Fuller, host of Sonatas and Soundscapes, is also here guest guessing. This is exciting. Hopefully I'll get some good tidbits here.
Yeah, hopefully so. Maybe some music-related thing will come up. Not that that's any guarantee.
We do need to put some classical music track on this guessing round A2. Okay, Russ, what do you got for us?
Well, in 1786, our
good
general...
Good year.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. 100 years to my birth year.
Okay.
Oh, 200 years.
Maybe we should start over.
Yeah.
In 1786, our General Assembly decided to move the state capital from Charleston to the geographical center of the state. And that, of course, is how Columbia came to be. Now, at the time, of course, most people lived in and around Charleston. No one lived in Columbia, and there were settlers in the upstate or the backcountry at that time. For a number of years now, you know, the upstate, Anderson, Greenville, Spartanburg area, has been the most populous area of the state. But as our population has soared past the 5 million mark, we've seen tremendous growth along the coast in Oree, Charleston, Beaufort, Berkeley, and Dorchester counties, and continued growth in the upstate, like in Greenville, and also over around Rock Hill. So our question is, what is the state's current population center point? For example, the nation's population center point is in Whiting County, Missouri. Mm-hmm. The 1790 census had it in Maryland. So it's moved all the way to Missouri. So you can see the westward expansion of the country and the population shift in the country. Mm. So where is South Carolina's center point today in light of all of the growth in the state?
I should have been taking notes.
A, Manning. B, you might want to visualize the map. The ocean's on the right. A.
What about the freshwater coast?
A, Manning. B, Orangeburg. C, Columbia. D, Newberry.
Ooh, I feel pretty comfortable about Newberry.
That was my first impulse.
Because it's moving. Yeah, Russ, give us a rundown again.
So you go, okay, A, Manning. B, Orangeburg. C, Columbia. D, Newberry. The state's population center point, as determined by the U.S. Census Bureau.
Okay. Yeah, this is official. This isn't Russ McKinney's GIS system here. but we could have an SCGIS from Russ McKinney. Yeah, I mean, if you're saying we're talking about the growth in the upstate, I did tell you that we were focusing on the first congressional district discussion this week, so I'm wondering if you're trying to throw some curveballs. But I think Newberry, and there is an opera house in Newberry, which I think, just, you know, lends credence to it.
Uh-huh.
What do you think, Bradley? What are you guessing?
I'm leaning towards Newberry as well. I'm thinking the whole I-85 corridor growth along that side. And I was going to say, you know, Columbia being geographic center, but also balancing out that growth around the Charleston-Mount Pleasant area and Greenville-Spartanburg. But, you know, that seems too obvious.
I know, but
we overdo this, right?
If it really is Columbia, I mean, it's going to be funny. But, yeah, I think Newberry is probably the best bet here, Russ.
Newberry?
I'm going to say Newberry. Right.
Well, the answer is Columbia.
Oh! You see how that works? Do you see how that works?
I always get these right when I listen.
And the center point is actually in the city limits of Columbia.
Wow.
In the Colonial Heights neighborhood, which is kind of near where the Palmetto Health Richland Hospital is, if you're familiar with that. So, in 1786, our founding fathers got it right. They put the capital in the geographic center of the state, and today the state's population center is also in Columbia.
Awesome. Thank you, Russ. That was great. Good job, Bradley.
Well, I tried.
I thought we'd get somewhere. Thanks. The The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like friend of the pod, Sarah of Tarth, Game of Thrones fan. Follow us on Instagram at SCLeadPod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at SCLEDEPOD. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Sean Scott is our intern. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on July 1st, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening, and happy 4th of July.
Secret patriotic message. We're rooting for Team USA. Go Queens, beat those Brits like we did in 1776. My God, Jamie Lovegrove, if you're rooting for them, I swear to God, you're not coming back on this podcast.